You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We will cover the NHL playoffs top to bottom, looking at all 8 series as they are well underway in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Alongside analyst Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Richard Pollock away from the program on this Saturday. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. The Moose winners last night 5-2 as they finish off their season. You can find all that information on IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, good to see you. You're looking well on this Saturday, the 16th of April.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Good morning, Drew. And I'm finally dry after coming into the studio soaking wet. It seems like it's been raining for the last 3 days.
It has been a little bit dreary out there. It's a little bit cold. It's a cold November rain, despite it being here in April. I was walking the dog this morning, and the dog was shivering, and I was shivering. So, we cut the walk nice and short, because nobody enjoys that at that point in time.
Yeah, I guess it's nice, because it'll clean things up, with all the snow melting, all the salt and sand on the streets. But I want to give a shout-out quickly, Drew, before we get into the Winnipeg Jets. I know you want to talk about Kyle Connor.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Lodge getting a hat trick, his first 3 goals of the season.
And natural hat trick at that.
Yes, and Jansen Harkins picks up his first AHL goal. So nice to see the Moose finishing strong for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an impressive performance by Jimmy Lodge last night, certainly. Let's get started. You mentioned with Kyle Connor, that's sort of the big news of the week from the Winnipeg Jets perspective. No surprise. I mean, no surprise that the Jets waited until Monday and locker room cleanout day to announce the signing of Kyle Connor. It distracts, I think, most people from the fact that the Jets, for the fourth time in 5 years, missed the playoffs. Instead, let's look at this nice shiny toy that the Winnipeg Jets have in Kyle Connor instead of the disappointment of the past season. Don't blame the Jets for doing it in that manner. I would have done it the same way, try and distract from the true story there. But Kyle Connor, he does put pen to paper. He is leaving the University of Michigan, and he will be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup or potentially in the Manitoba Moose lineup next season. But I would suspect the Jets will do everything in their power to ensure he's playing with the big club as opposed to playing with the AHL team.
Andrew, Kyle Connor certainly did it in a very unique way, announcing his signing on Twitter and Instagram. But we expected Kyle Connor to sign somewhere between early April and mid-April. And when you have the type of season that Kyle Connor had, 71 points, being a finalist for the Hobie Baker Award, going far into the NCAA playoffs with Michigan, winning Big Ten with Michigan, you expected the natural progression for him to be to sign an NHL contract, kind of taking that Jacob Trouba career path, right?
Sure.
Playing 1 year at the University of Michigan, really dominating in his first year. And Kyle Connor, you could say that he would be best served to maybe play one more or two more years in NCAA. But really, when you're in a situation like the Winnipeg Jets and Kyle Connor are, where you are a young team, you have room to grow in the NHL. I mean, this guy, from all accounts, all the scouts and all the members of the Winnipeg Jets player development staff, Kyle Connor is ready. They feel he's ready to play in the NHL. And that doesn't mean, Drew, that he's not going to have some bumps and bruises along the way in his rookie season next year. It doesn't mean he's going to come into the NHL and lead the league in scoring. But it means that they believe that at this point in his career, the best step is for him to join the NHL. And that's why he signed his contract. It was no surprise to us. And, now for the coming months leading up to October when the 2016-17 season starts, it's, for us to talk about where he fits in and, how he's going to do in his rookie year. But by all accounts, he's going to be a very good NHLer. I've watched him play a few times at Michigan, not live, but on TV. And,
sure, yeah.
You know, he's got an incredible skill set. I don't know if he has anything left to prove at the NCAA level. So I think this was the right move.
Yeah, it's hard to believe he does have anything left to prove. I mean, he was so dominant in his freshman season with the University of Michigan. And you know, the Wolverines are going through a transition period. You know, his line mates, Compher and Mott, aren't going to be there next year. So there'd be no real reason for why he would want to stick around in a Michigan program that seems like they might be going through a slight rebuild. I mean, not in the traditional sense, of course. But, you know, when you put up those numbers at NCAA, there's no reason why you shouldn't begin to take your next step in your professional development. Also, the big paycheck that's, you know, being offered to you is certainly enticing as well.
That's the thing, Drew. And he said in the conference call, and I think we're going to play a little clip of the conference call here, but he said that his goal was to be in the NHL after 1 year, sure, in Michigan. And that didn't mean necessarily that that was going to happen, but that was his goal, because you never know how many points you're going to put up. Kyle Connor was a highly regarded prospect, went 17th overall to the Jets, but nobody, I think, expected him to equal Jack Eichel's point total. And
better it.
And better it. Yeah. So it was really impressive with the point streak and everything like that. So it was really impressive, and I think that, you know, the future is extremely bright for this kid. And, you know, right now with the Winnipeg Jets, with the way they're trending and all of the youth in their lineup, guys like Nikolai Ehlers and Andrew Kopp and even Mark Scheifele is still a pretty young guy.
Sure.
You know, I think he's going to fit in very well. So, you know, it's pretty exciting news after a very tough Jets season. I think this was kind of a nice bit of news for Jets fans, because, you know, all the Jets fans are watching all the other teams in the playoffs right now, not having a lot to cheer about or talk about. So when Kyle Connor, you know, announced that he was signing, I think a lot of Jets fans let out a sigh of relief.
Well, I think they let out a sigh of relief because I think they were thinking, you know, worst case scenario, you know, that you're looking at his name escapes me. The kid that was drafted by Nash, Jimmy Vesey, the guy who won the Hobie Baker. You're looking at, and I don't think that was realistic, because, you know, Kyle Connor wasn't going to pass up millions of dollars for the next, you know, few years in order to get into unrestricted free agency like Jimmy Vesey did. And, you know, Jimmy Vesey was a third round pick. Kyle Connor was a first round pick. There really is no comparison between the two players. But, you know, I think Jets fans are happy. It's done. He's under contract. They see, you know, they've seen players be able to make that transition from, you know, being 1 year out of their draft class. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers, he went back. He played that 1 year in the queue. He dominated. He stepped into the Jets lineup, and he was good in his rookie year. Injury, you know, he had the injury problems, and he started off well, had a bit of a dip, and he ended well. You know, Jacob Trouba, you saw he played that 1 year in Michigan, you know, came into the NHL, and, you know, has fit into the NHL. You can argue if he's regressing or if he's improving, but whatever it is, he's been certainly a steady NHL defenseman.
There's definitely a pipeline from the University of Michigan to the Winnipeg Jets. And Red Berenson announced that he's going to spend one more year as head coach of the University of Michigan. It might be his last year. It's certainly going to be one of his last years.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the results have been really good. Even though Andrew Kopp struggled in that fourth line center role, certainly towards the end of the season, we saw him get a couple of really nice breakaway goals.
Sure.
You know, he was good. And even though Jacob Trouba might have taken a step back this year, he's still going to be a big part of this Jets defense going forward. So whether you see him as a number one defenseman or a number two defenseman, he had a bad year, but so did the rest of the Jets team. So you can't be too hard on Trouba, I think. And maybe because he's going into his second contract and all of that, you know, there's been some criticism on him. But I still think, you know, considering that, Drew, that defensemen take longer to mature,
mm-hmm,
and the fact that he's only 22 years old, I think this was a small blip on the radar. I still think Jacob Trouba has a lot of upside. So I think that Kyle Connor will probably fit in nicely, and I think he'll be in a top six role. I don't think they want him buried on the third or fourth line.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is, you know, how do you foresee the Jets sort of deploying Kyle Connor for next season? If most people are in agreement or would think that, you know, the line of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler will stick together, and that would be your quote-unquote first line next season, do you see Connor being on the left side of Brian Little to start next season?
I do, and that doesn't mean necessarily that Kyle Connor is going to spend the entire year on the second line or in the top six,
mm-hmm,
but when you have a guy with his skill and his creativity and someone who put up those types of numbers in the NCAA, doesn't mean that it's going to necessarily translate, Drew, but you probably want him playing a top six role. At the very least, you're going to want him on the third line. Kyle Connor, I don't expect to spend much time in the AHL. The Jets want him in their lineup next year, so I would expect him to play the wing left. He's a left winger, so I'd expect him to be on that second line. But maybe if they want to move Nikolaj Ehlers down to spread out a little bit of the offense to play with Brian Little and Drew Stafford, for example, or whether it's Matthew Perreault on the second line,
you
would probably expect him to play a top six role. And if you want to use a comparable, Dylan Larkin coming out of the University of Michigan goes to Detroit, and he was playing on the first line of Detroit for much of the year. Now they've got him on the second line because they've got Abdelkader up there with Zetterberg and Datsyuk. But hey, these are great discussions to have, and we'll have to wait and see what happens in training camp and the preseason. That's 4 or 5 months away. But certainly, you know, the sky's the limit as far as the potential he has.
Sure.
And we'll have to wait and see. Here in Winnipeg, you know, we've hyped him up quite a bit, but he deserves it with the type of season he
has. I was going to ask you, is there too much hype behind him, or is just sort of hype when you've got a player of his nature, a first-round pick who, you know, was a finalist, arguably should have won the Hobey Baker Award? Is it just natural that all this hype is going to exist, or do you think that there's too much? Is there too much pressure on him? Is there any pressure on him, given that the Jets, you know, missed the playoffs last year? Is it, you know, a lot of people acknowledge that they might even be younger than they were this past season. Is Kyle Connor coming in with pressure on him, or is he coming into a good situation where he can sort of bounce between maybe that second line left wing spot and the third line left wing spot as he, you know, gets to know the NHL game and as he gets his legs under him over the course of an 82-game season?
Yeah, and it's a good question, because in any Canadian market, Drew, you're going to have a lot of pressure. A rookie player is going to have a lot of pressure on him, and especially, as you mentioned, with a team who missed the playoffs last year and they want to get back. Even though the Jets are a young team, I don't think that there's any doubt that the Jets want to get back into the playoffs next year. They're not doing a long rebuild. I mean, this is a rebuild on the fly with young players. I expect the Jets to be more active in the free agent market coming up. But as far as Kyle Connor goes, I think he's always going to kind of brush it off that there's going to be pressure on him. But it's up to the coaching staff and management to really make him feel comfortable and put him in a role to succeed. Especially, for example, if he's playing with a veteran like Brian Little, mm-hmm. and all the veterans on the team are going to make him feel comfortable. And sure, as a 20-year-old coming into the NHL, you know, there's going to be pressure and all of that. But that's no different than any other player. It's just a little bit heightened in a Canadian market, I think. But I think he'll do well. And, you know, he seems like a guy who is older than he really is.
It's like mature beyond his years,
yeah,
you're saying?
He doesn't seem as new as maybe other players that are first coming into the NHL. So I think he'll be fine. There's going to be pressure.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's part of becoming an everyday NHLer. You have to learn how to kind of deal with it, right?
Well, it seems like, you know, most of these, you know, you saw with Ehlers, you saw with Scheifele when he became a regular in the league, that, you know, they come out and, you know, for the first 10, maybe 15 games, they look like they fit in. And then there's a lull. And the lull is, you know, the game catches up to them. They're no longer as, you know, the stuff that they tried to get away with in junior or in college, they realize they can't get away with that in the NHL. It's a different game. It's a man's game.
Well, sometimes, and then, it takes years, Drew. Like, sure. You know, some guys
never
quicker.
Even get it.
Sometimes it takes 4 or 5 years. I mean, look at a guy like Nazem Kadri. He's almost 25 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
He was suspended twice this year, and he's still maturing as a hockey player. So some guys come into the league as 19 or 20-year-olds, and they're already mature beyond their years. Other guys take longer. So I think it's up to the player himself, and it's also up to the leadership of the team, you know, to guide him through his rookie season. And I think the Jets do have a great group of leaders. And you've mentioned Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba. All of those players have transitioned well from either junior or college hockey to the NHL, so I think he'll be fine.
As we head to break, let's hear from Kyle Connor himself. This is during his press conference. I believe it happened on Tuesday after his signing was announced. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
For me personally, I think I'm just ready for this next step. I think turning pro was a whole family decision, and I think I'm ready for this. Big part of it is just consistency. In the college hockey, there's not a whole lot of games, and you got to bring it every single night. And also, I think I really learned the 200-foot game here at the University of Michigan. I think the coaching staff really helped me, and I took a lot of strides in that area. I think my game transitions well to the next level. Play with a lot of speed and skill, and I think I use my vision as well and create space for my teammates out there. You know, that's a goal for next season for me, a good off season, and, you know, try to make the lineup and definitely have an impact on the Jets. You know, try to help them get back to the playoffs and, you know, see that whiteout at the MTS Center.
Dakos going to get the nod. Has never started a National Hockey League playoff game.
That's what you dream of.
Shooting up high. And hit left was in the face. He's hurting badly. Mark Stahl's stick comes up. Goes right near the eye.
He'll be reevaluated tomorrow.
Antti Raanta replacing the injured Henrik Lundqvist. And on Raanta. Scores! Jeff Zachoff. A sensational performance in his first NHL playoff game.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That, of course, a synopsis of Game 1 between the Penguins and the Rangers. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. It is Marlon Wayans' weekend at Rumors. He's been in town since Thursday, playing sold-out show after sold-out show. So much so, demand has gotten to be so extreme, they have added one more show. Tonight, 11:55 p.m., 5 minutes before midnight, a late night show at Rumors. In case you missed out on seeing Marlon Wayans, that show just added. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. As Game 2 goes between the Rangers and the Penguins later on this afternoon, Game 1, of course, won by the Penguins by a 5-2 margin. And as we all expected, the goalies at the end of that game were Jeff Zatkoff for the Penguins and Antti Raanta for the Rangers. So let's start with the goaltending question, because we certainly do not know who's going to play goal for either the Penguins or the Rangers in this afternoon's Game 2. For the Penguins, is it Marc-Andre Fleury? Is he healthy from his concussion? Or do they go back with Zatkoff, who had an impressive Game 1 performance? And then for the Rangers, is it Henrik Lundqvist, who was injured in the game, took a stick through his mask and near the eye area? Or is it going to be Antti Raanta getting the start in net for the Rangers? I mean, that's got to start with the goaltending when we discuss that series.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned how unlikely the two goalies that finished the game one were, with Jeff Zatkoff and Antti Raanta. You were kind of expecting Marc-Andre Fleury to start Game 1 just because he came out onto the ice before the game and it looked like he was ready to go. But it looks like Marc-Andre Fleury, even though he's listed as a game-time decision, looks like there's a good chance that he's not going to play. He said that yesterday that he's still feeling a little bit fuzzy from his second concussion. So it looks like there's a good chance that Jeff Zatkoff is going to start this afternoon. And when you're talking about Henrik Lundqvist, he also practiced yesterday and he spoke to the media after practice, but he's also still kind of reeling from taking Mark Stahl's stick in his eye. So it looks like there's a good chance that it is Zatkoff versus Raanta. Now, things always change and we have, you know, 4 or 5 hours still before the game, and we'll have to wait and see at 2 p.m. Eastern what happens. But when you're talking about Jeff Zatkoff, a guy that at 28 years old has never started an NHL playoff game, and he's been a backup for most of his career. He started his career off with the LA Kings.
He's really he was the Penguins' third string goaltender at the end of the season.
With Matt Murray. Yeah.
Matt Murray, who is this highly touted prospect, had overtaken Zatkoff in the Penguins' net. Murray, of course, injured in the last game of the season as well. He got bowled over in the game. Was it the game against the Flyers, if I'm not mistaken? I can't remember. Right at the game 82 for the Penguins, Matt Murray got injured.
I think it was the Flyers, yeah.
Yeah, so Zatkoff comes up from Wilkes-Barre Scranton, where he'd been playing for the Penguins AHL team, and is thrust into the spotlight of Game 1.
Well, and I realized that the storyline for Game 1 really was how well Sidney Crosby and Patrick Hornquist played on the top line, and Sidney Crosby scored a beautiful goal, and he deserves credit for how well he played. But for me, the story was how Jeff Zatkoff played early on in that game. The New York Rangers were all over the Pittsburgh Penguins
the first 10 minutes,
right? And I thought that Jeff Zatkoff really stood his ground, made some really key saves, and allowed the Pittsburgh Penguins to come back. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins are playing without Evgeny Malkin, who also is a game-time decision. He might come back.
He took line rushes yesterday for the Penguins, which to me is a pretty good indicator that he should be in the lineup. Well, if not today, you would think he'd be in the lineup for game three between the Penguins and the Rangers. I mean, taking line rushes in practice, it's not like he was taking line rushes with the scrubs. He was taking line rushes with the regulars. That, to me, is a pretty decent sign that the Penguins might get the boost of Evgeny Malkin back in their lineup.
Right, and Drew, when you're talking about Evgeny Malkin coming back into the lineup, now you're talking about having him as your second-line center as opposed to Nick Bonino, who's been their second-line center. And, you know, no offense to Nick Bonino, but Evgeny Malkin is one of the top centers in the NHL. And on the other side, you're talking about a New York Rangers team that's not going to have the services of Dan Girardi for Game 2. So now you're without Ryan McDonagh, your number one defenseman, your captain, and now you're without Dan Girardi, your number two defenseman.
He's banged up. He's going to miss the game. With the various number of injuries, according to head coach Alain Vigneault. The Rangers' defense is getting to be quite problematic. It wasn't strong entering the game, particularly without McDonagh in the lineup, and now you're going to be without Dan Girardi, who hasn't been fantastic this year by any stretch of the imagination, but he is a veteran defenseman who's been through a number of the playoff battles, probably going to be replaced in the lineup by Dylan McArath, the guy from Winnipeg.
Right, and the Rangers still have an excellent defense, but you mentioned without Dan Girardi, Dylan McArath goes in on that right side, and they've talked about possibly calling up Rafael Diaz as well. Yes. But when you're talking about the New York Rangers defense, you're talking about now a situation without the services of Ryan McDonagh and without Dan Girardi. You're talking about Kevin Klein and Mark Stahl now going up against Sidney Crosby's line.
Yeah.
So Sidney Crosby's line has been lights out for basically the last 2 months. Crosby had 3 points. Hornquist had the hat trick on for game one.
Yeah, 4 points, hat trick and an assist.
So now you're in a situation where the New York Rangers are missing the top two defensemen. It's going to be very tough. And if Malkin comes back into the lineup, then you're expecting Keith Yandle and Kevin Klein to shut down that line. So it's going to be an interesting game too. But right now, all of the cards are stacked against the New York Rangers. And heading into the series, the Pittsburgh Penguins were favored just because of the way they played since Mike Sullivan took over from Mike Johnston. So this series has turned out to be a fantastic series. I know going into the playoffs, Chicago and St. Louis was kind of that it series that everybody was looking forward to, and that series has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But when you consider that the number one goalies are out of the lineup right now, and then you have some key players out of the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers, Malkin, and then on the Rangers you've got McDonagh and Girardi. I mean, it's a very intriguing series to me, Drew, and when you look at how wide open the East is, I still think this is Washington's year, but when you consider how wide open it is, you get out of the first round, and then, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury comes back, Evgeny Malkin is back. This Pittsburgh Penguins team is a dangerous team.
Absolutely. And the question has been about their defense itself. And they went actually with 7D in the game one. They went with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen.
Yep.
Ole Mattar returns to the lineup. He had been out, and we know how, you know, when he's healthy, which has always been the knock on him, he's a tremendously talented defenseman. And Chris Letang, I think, is still actually had an underrated season, regular season, given how good he was for the Penguins offensively. And you know, even in his own zone, he has improved.
Well, Drew, if it wasn't for Doughty, Carlson, and Burns, Letang would probably be a Norris Trophy finalist.
Yeah.
I thought Ole Mattar looked very shaky in the first game, and he's had injury problems this year and last year. And I think he'll get more comfortable as the series goes on. To me, another key for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Pittsburgh Penguins went out and they acquired Justin Schultz before the trade deadline, but a key pairing for me is Brian Dumoulin and Trevor Daley, who they acquired from Chicago, and I thought they did a really good job against the New York Rangers' second line. You've got now Brassard, Miller, and Zuccarello. Zuccarello was usually on the first line. This Rangers team, I think, is struggling to score goals, and especially now with the concerns they have on defense. You know, you go down 2-0 to the Pittsburgh Penguins, you're putting yourself in a serious hole. Not to say that you can't come back, but this is a key game for them. They have to win this game, and it's going to be very tough. You know, it's a good opportunity for a guy like Dylan McArath coming in for Dan Girardi, but you're going up against a very talented Pittsburgh Penguins team. And you got to give also Pittsburgh Penguins credit for the way that fourth line has played. Tommy Kuhnuckel, a guy that nobody had heard of heading into this season, doing an excellent job. You got the ageless wonder, Matt Cullen,
I
there.
I thought you were actually going to make a pun. They say that Kunackle throws the Kunackle ball or something, the Kunackle puck.
Well, he scored a beautiful goal, Drew. Yeah. And, I mean, and this time of the year, you know, the fourth line, when they're contributing, I mean, it really takes a lot of pressure off of your top two lines. So you got to give a lot of credit for the job Mike Sullivan's done.
Yeah.
And, you know, this series, like we said, with kind of the storylines being the top two goalies being out, you know, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. We will find out closer in a number of hours, in about 4 or 5 hours' time probably, closer to puck drop, who are the starting goaltenders if Evgeny Malkin returns to the lineup. And I think if he does, the Rangers, I think that's going to be a difference maker. I don't think that the Rangers, particularly without McDonough, without Girardi, I don't think they have the defense in which to stop both the Crosby line and the Malkin line. That's too much to ask of a banged-up Rangers defense that may or may not be with their Vezina Trophy-winning goaltender in Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, and that's the staple of their team, Drew. That has been the staple of their team for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, this team relies on Henrik Lundqvist and that defense, which is a top defense in the Eastern Conference. And you heard Alain Vigneault yesterday calling out his top two centers, Derek Stepan and Derek Brassard, basically saying that they need to be better. And they really do. I mean, they're going to have to score some goals here, and the advantage for them is that Jeff Zatkoff isn't Marc-Andre Fleury. Even though Zatkoff made 35 saves
sure. In
game one, I mean, this isn't a star-studded Pittsburgh Penguins defense. Letang and Mata are good, but I mean, they can expose the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Rangers are a fast team when you have guys like Zuccarello and Chris Kreider, and you got Eric Staal there with Kevin Hayes on the third line, so they're going to get their chances, but this game two is critical. You go down 2-0 back to New York, I don't like your chances of coming back.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Mike Colligan. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. We'll talk more about the upcoming Game 2 between the Penguins and the Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. .30 Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Colligan. Mike covers the NHL for Forbes.com. He's particularly familiar with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mike, first and foremost, have you recovered from the weekend you spent here in Winnipeg about 6 weeks ago? You know, you spent a whole weekend hanging out with the IC boys. Have you recovered from that weekend?
I certainly have. I've warmed up and gotten adjusted back to the U.S. in a normal weather down here, but I certainly had a great time there. It was a lot of good hockey, despite not having playoff implications. It was interesting to see where some of those teams are, and I think I certainly walked away with a great impression of where Winnipeg is headed in the next 2 or 3 years here, not the full rebuild I thought I was going to see coming into that weekend.
Well, there you go. We want to talk to you, Mike, of course, about two playoff teams, one of which you're particularly familiar with. That's the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have game two later on this afternoon against the New York Rangers. Got to start with the big story from game one that, of course, focuses on the goaltending. You know, you've covered the Penguins closely for a number of years now. How surprised were you to see that performance by Jeff Zatkoff, particularly in the first half of the first period, where he was absolutely shelled by the Rangers and had to make a number of top-quality saves in order to keep the Penguins in the contest?
Yeah, I definitely was surprised. And, Drew, I think you really nailed it there. Is that first 5 to 10 minutes, I think, not only determined game one, but potentially determined this series. The Rangers had some really great opportunities there. Guys like Stepan, Kreider, Rick Nash was more or less invisible. But the Rangers had a chance to really jump on Zatkoff, put some doubt in him. And I think that would have been a totally different game had that happened. They allowed Zatkoff to get confidence, making those big saves. And then you saw the game really starting to even out a bit. And I think when I look back at that, you know, you look at the scoreboard, you see 5-2, and you say, okay, that's the Pittsburgh Penguins just dominating like they've done for the last 6 or 8 weeks here. But I thought the Rangers actually played very well, and that may be disappointing for them, because when they look at that game and they say, you know, we played pretty well, we had a ton of opportunities that we missed, there's not much more we can do, especially with some of the big injuries they're dealing with, and even potentially Henrik Lundqvist not being 100%. That's got to be a little frustrating for them, because I don't know that they have a lot left that they can throw at the Penguins right now, and if Pittsburgh keeps scoring like they are, this could be a pretty quick series here.
Mike, the performance by Zatkoff in Game 1, does that maybe give pause to the Penguins rushing Marc-Andre Fleury back from his second concussion this season? You know, Zatkoff obviously performed quite admirably. He was able to keep the Penguins in the game. Do maybe, you know, the Penguins management sit back and say, hey, we're okay if we need to give Fleury another couple days off to get fully 110% healthy and back from that concussion?
I think it has to. You know, this is a long grind here. This is 2 months, and not only are we talking about this playoffs, but when we're getting into a concussion discussion, we're talking long-term here, and this is the Penguins' goalie that they've just locked up for a multi-year contract going into the next few years. As you mentioned, this isn't his first concussion. He's dealt with a couple this year and others in the past as well. So you got to give pause there. The Penguins aren't in a desperation situation where they've got to throw him in there. Ideally, they would have loved to have Matt Murray, their kind of rising star backup goaltender, available, but he had a concussion as well, suffered in the last game of the season against Philadelphia, and from everything I've heard, is nowhere close to returning. So I don't think they're in a position where they need to push Fleury to get in there, and I think the same would apply to Evgeny Malkin as well. There's some talk that he may make his return from what's been kind of phrased as an elbow injury, potentially ligament strain. That's one I wouldn't mess around with for all the same reasons. That this is a series that I think they have in control. And if it gets tied up and they get down and they need to bring in some of those guys and get a little desperate, then it makes a little bit more sense. But I think if they could get away with this series going 5, maybe 6 at the most, and not have to force those guys back in the lineup, I think that plays a little bit better for the Penguins heading into a potential second-round matchup against a really tough Washington team.
Mike, you just mentioned Evgeny Malkin, and he was taking the line rushes yesterday, and he's a game-time decision. He may or may not play Game 2. When he comes back, do you expect him to just slot right into that second-line center role? Because Nick Bonino has been doing an excellent job with Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel on the kind of, if you want to call it, quote-unquote, second line or third line. Where do you see Malkin fitting in, and who do you see his line mates being? Because right now, as you said, the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't having trouble scoring goals.
It's nothing I would rush, and I certainly don't expect him to be right back to his normal 20, 22 minutes a night. I think they're going to take it easy with Malkin. Even getting him in the lineup just makes the Rangers think again about how do you match up with a team that has potentially Evgeny Malkin on a so-called third line. I mean, that's unbelievable when you think of a matchup, a nightmare that could be, especially with the Rangers and their defense being banged up. Losing McDonough, to me, is the game changer there. Mark Stahl has not been great this season. Dan Girardi's been far worse than that. And so they don't have the answer to match against three Penguins lines. So I think for now, it makes sense for the Penguins to keep those guys split up. Bonino, Phil Kessel, and Carl Hagelin have been fantastic for the last month as a second line. And with Sidney Crosby playing well, there's no reason to break up those groups. So I think we'll see Malkin on a third line, probably with Rust and Connor Sheary, two guys that are fast and smart players. When you're an undersized guy, you know, we see more and more of these, whether it's Gaudreau in Calgary and some of these kind of Martin St. Louis type players like Sheary, they have to be smart in order to succeed in the NHL. So these are guys that can play with Malkin and potentially make a third scoring line for Pittsburgh, which again I think is just going to be very tough for the Penguins or for the Rangers to stop. I think longer term, maybe we see Malkin and Crosby united for kind of the first time. We've never seen them get an extended look together. I think if that Kessel and Bonino line keeps scoring and keeps producing, that might give Mike Sullivan an opportunity to unite his two big stars on a line together, and especially going into the Washington Capitals in round 2.
Mike, heading into the playoffs, there were some question marks about this group of defensemen, if they were going to be good enough to defend, not any shortage of offensive defensemen, especially with the season Chris Letang has had. Ollie Matta and Chris Letang have formed that number one pair for most of the season. And then Brian Dumoulin and Trevor Daley, that's been the second pair since Trevor Daley came over from Chicago. Do you think that this group of defensemen is going to be good enough to defend, especially if they get out of the first round and play the Washington Capitals?
I don't. You know, I remember we talked about this maybe 6 weeks ago, probably when I was in town there, and I don't think this is a team that, you know, when we think back on teams that have won the Stanley Cup, and you look at their rosters a few years later, and you say, okay, you know what, I get it. I see all the talent that they had. This was a stacked team that had not only six good defensemen, but maybe eight or nine. And when you look at that group for the Pittsburgh Penguins, I just don't see that. You know, Trevor Daley was having trouble in Chicago and wasn't a great top defenseman in Dallas either. He's been fantastic for Pittsburgh because of the style of hockey that they play. But Justin Schultz, another guy that really was out of favor based on how he played in Edmonton there. And Ben Lovejoy, Ian Cole, really nothing better than good third pairing defensemen. So I think it's a concern for me. But what's really surprised me is how the Penguins have compensated for that. They've acquired a ton of speed, whether it be a trade for a guy like Carl Hagelin, whether it be calling up guys like Sheary and Rust and getting them into the lineup, and they've used that speed. I would almost say their best defense is their offense. The ability to just get in on the forecheck, always be pushing the puck into the offensive zone and then pinning it there and utilizing their speed to just terrorize opposing defensemen, it really never puts the Penguins back on their heels and stuck in their own end. They've got the mobility to break the puck out quickly and never get that 90-second shift where you're just pinned in and the other team is cycling on you. Washington will give them troubles. Washington is really good in the neutral zone, great on the forecheck, and great defensively. I think we'll see that defense exposed a bit if that's a matchup. But for now, I don't think the Rangers have it. The Rangers tried to throw some pressure at Pittsburgh and get in and on their defensemen and force those turnovers. It was happening, but the Rangers just ultimately cracked, and Pittsburgh made them pay with five goals in game one.
Our guest is Mike Colligan on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins and the NHL for Forbes.com. Mike, you mentioned the Penguins getting five goals in that game one. Three of those goals and one assist came off the stick of Patrick Hornqvist. He had 4 points in that game one contest. You know, Hornqvist is a guy who came over from the Predators in the James Neal trade a few years ago. Is he underappreciated for the consistency that he provides night in, night out for the Penguins team?
Yeah, you know, when that trade was very interesting in that the Penguins were at a moment where I think they were at a bit of a crossroads as a franchise. They had just melted down in kind of back-to-back playoffs. James Neal was one of the biggest culprits as far as you think back to some of those series against Philadelphia where the Penguins were just taking bad penalties and Neal was getting suspended. It was a team that the ownership and management said really lacked character. And when you get into those pressure situations, you need guys that have character and can really weather the storm and the stress of the playoffs. Neal showed at that point in his career wasn't ready for it, and I think they targeted Patrick Hornqvist as a guy that was exactly what they needed. Not only would he bring the character and control and determination himself, but he'd rub off on the other players, and I think that's definitely what's happened. Hornqvist, I think, is becoming potentially the, you know, Wayne Simmonds is a great net front presence in Philadelphia, but I don't think many are better than Hornqvist as far as really becoming the next Thomas Holmstrom, a guy that just is impossible to move from the front of the net. And when you've got Sidney Crosby buzzing around the outside, you can't put too much pressure on Hornqvist. And I think that's where he can sometimes disappear a bit in front and end up poking in goals like he did the other night. For the Rangers, the biggest thing for them is finding a way to move him. And Dan Girardi just had no answers. I think we'll probably see him get scratched in game two and Dylan McElrath get an opportunity to kind of bring a physical presence to their team. And I think the Penguins just were able to do whatever they wanted in front of whether it was Henrik Lundqvist or Antti Raanta in game one. They need a physical presence like McElrath to come in and move Hornqvist. Otherwise, I think it's going to be very tough for them. So Hornqvist is certainly no James Neal. He's not going to score 40 goals like Neal is capable, but he brings a different element to this Penguins team and arguably one that they certainly needed.
Mike, with all of the uncertainty that has been around this team with the potential sale and the uncertainty of how long Jim Rutherford's going to be around, do you think that the players are kind of using that as motivation to win now?
That's a great question. You know, I know for Sidney Crosby, he was asked late in the year, you know, with Mario Lemieux potentially selling his stake, is this kind of a last win one for Mario type season here? And when we talked midway through the season, it looked like the Penguins would be lucky to even make the playoffs. But now I think a combination of playing some really good hockey under Mike Sullivan and a really unimpressive Eastern Conference, in my opinion, when you get past Washington and even Pittsburgh with some of their flaws, there's just not much that I'd be concerned about. And so the road could not be more wide open for them, and this is a great opportunity. And the year that they won the Stanley Cup in 2009, I think they got some lucky bounces along the way. And we criticize this as what was supposed to be a great dynasty that won not only one cup, but two, three, four. They were going to challenge the Edmonton Oilers, and that never happened. But you look at how much has to go your way in a Stanley Cup playoff season, and so much can go, whether that's bounces, injuries, or just getting the right matchups. And so for the Penguins, this is an opportunity for them that they can certainly make sure that window is not shut. I think when you start to look 2-3 years down the road, the lack of draft picks and all of the assets they've traded away in these last few seasons is going to catch up to them. But if they can keep that window open for another year or two here, they're certainly going to have as good a chance as anyone to make that run and ultimately try to grab a second Stanley Cup in the Malkin and Crosby era.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. The Penguins deployed 11 forwards and 7 D during their Game 1 victory over the Rangers. Do you expect that to change if Evgeny Malkin is able to return to the lineup and they'll go with a more traditional 12 and 6? Or if Malkin is held out for another game, do you expect the 11 and 7 to continue?
Well, if you watch the Pittsburgh Penguins play, while they claim they have 7 defensemen out there, I think only 2 or 3 are really playing defense on any given night. I mean, they are really one of many teams that are, I think, taking a lot from this 3-on-3 and how it's made them rethink attacking in the offensive zone. You see a lot of teams kind of getting this circular cycle going, and I'm seeing teams now starting to do that 5-on-5. Nashville's one of them. Pittsburgh is one of them. Teams that have really good offensive defensemen basically treat them as forwards, and they say, hey, while you're going to defend in our end, Chris Letang, go ahead, get below the goal line, be the first man in on the forecheck. I mean, that's something we just never used to see in the NHL, but I think teams are adapting. Pittsburgh is certainly at the forefront there, and when you have so much offensive ability on that back end, you can afford to do that. So I don't think that they'll change that. I think when you get into a playoff series, you don't necessarily need to run 4 lines equally like you maybe want to do throughout the year. You can stack and load up 3 lines like the Penguins have, and I think that will be giving them enough options offensively here. So I think the 7 defensemen gives them more flexibility, and it also allows them to ease Malkin back into the lineup here and give them some unique opportunities, whether it's a 3rd line, jumping up with Crosby for here and there, and probably getting some power play time as well.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins and the NHL for Forbes.com. Mike, always appreciate your insights and analysis into the Penguins. Have yourself a great weekend, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, and talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Ted to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, the downside to this time of year, we discuss coaches and general managers being fired. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That was hurtful. I didn't think there was any need of it, and I felt like I was fired for 3 weeks. Every day.
That is former Ottawa Senators head coach Dave Cameron. He met with the media earlier this week after being dismissed by the Senators as their bench boss. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So Ezzy, Dave Cameron dismissed as Ottawa Senators head coach. That happened earlier this week, just after Brian Murray resigned his post as Senators general manager. They find the replacement in-house in Pierre Dorion. No surprise, that was the transition that was always expected there in Ottawa. I like this new trend of fired head coaches giving press conferences after and speaking their mind, because Dave Cameron was tremendously honest in speaking with the Ottawa media, saying that he felt he had been fired for the last 3 weeks of the regular season after Eugene Melnyk, his close friend. That wasn't a traditional, owner-coach relationship. They went back so many years that it sounds like there is, there's going to need to be a clearing of the air between Mr. Melnick and Mr. Cameron over how he was dismissed as Senators head coach.
Yeah, Drew, their relationship goes back to the OHL when Eugene Melnick and Dave Cameron were both in the OHL together. Pardon me.
Yeah,
I like Dave Cameron as a head coach, and you know he came in under tough circumstances, and he got the Ottawa Senators into the playoffs last year. A lot of that had to do with Andrew Hammond and the way he played, but I think this Ottawa Senators team has been flawed for quite some time, and it's a good team, and they're led by Erik Karlsson, obviously, and they're very solid in net with Craig Anderson and Andrew Hammond. But this is a team that, for me, they lack a top-end scorer up front. To me, they're kind of a team that has two second lines. And, you know, Bobby Ryan and Kyle Turris are good players. And I think Mika Zibanejad, you know, in his third season, is starting to come along there. But we should mention Mark Stone and J.G. Pageau, who formed a nice line there for the Ottawa Senators. But I still think that this team is a few players away, and they have trouble defending, and they've got some good young defensemen there, and Dion Phaneuf is going to help them, but you know, injuries played a part in that. As far as Dave Cameron's press conference goes, you could tell that he was upset, and it didn't take Pierre Dorion long to fire him after he was named officially as the general manager of the Ottawa Senators. But he obviously didn't think that Dave Cameron was going to be the guy, and you know, a lot of names have been thrown out there as possible replacements for Dave Cameron, and I imagine they're not going to wait long to name their coach. I would expect it to be in the next week or two, certainly before the NHL draft in June, Drew. But this Ottawa Senators team, it's just not that good. And again, you've got a lot of good young talent there, and some of the prospects that they've drafted maybe have been rushed a little bit. Like a guy like Curtis Lazar, for example, has struggled in his rookie year. I still think that there's significant work that needs to be done here. They need to bring in the right players, and there's certainly a lot of skill. But as far as the job that Dave Cameron did with the younger players, we mentioned Zibanejad, Mark Stone, Pageau, Cody Ceci. I think he's done a pretty good job with these young players, and part of that has to do with the fact that he was an assistant prior to becoming head coach, and he was also a coach and junior. He knows how to work with young players. So certainly it was a bit of a surprise for me, because this Ottawa Senators team, even though they missed the playoffs, they weren't that far out of it. I mean, they were right in it up until the last two or three weeks of the season. The last week or two of the season they fell out. I meant the last few weeks prior to the trade deadline.
Sure.
And that's kind of when it fell apart in kind of mid-March there. But
they need a defensive identity, and you know, you mentioned that you don't think that the coaching hire for the next, you know, that there's already talk about some of the names that are available to be the next coaching hire. One of those names that was bandied about is Adam Oates. Adam Oates was on TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Here's what he had to say about potentially being the new Senators head coach.
I don't know if my coaching career is over or not. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being a head guy. When you have the reins, it's tough to be an assistant after that. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. You know what, they got a lot of things to worry about right now. It's just one of those things that'll happen in the summer, and I'm sure they're waiting. They're putting a list of candidates together, and if I'm one of the candidates, great. If not, I understand. You know?
That was Adam Oates on TSN 1200. It's amazing how in the span of 2 weeks his tone has changed. 2 weeks ago, we talked about Adam Oates. He's a very controversial figure in the NHL because he's a skills coach for a number of different players, including Winnipeg Jets' Mark Scheifele. And Mike Yeo, the former head coach of the Minnesota Wild, more or less accused Adam Oates of undermining him when he was head coach of the Wild. 2 weeks ago, speaking to Elliot Friedman, Adam Oates said, quote, "I presume my coaching days are over." So it's amazing how in 2 weeks it's changed from "I presume my coaching days are over" to, "Well, maybe my coaching days are over, but I'd be interested in exploring an opportunity if it was to come about with the Ottawa Senators." They need a defensive coach in Ottawa first and foremost, from my perspective, so I'm not sure Adam Oates is necessarily the right guy for that job.
Well, even though Adam Oates is a Hall of Famer and he made his money as a setup guy and he's more of an offensive guy, I mean, he still knows the defensive side of the game. So if he's hired, that doesn't mean that he's not going to stress defense, Drew.
Sure.
But I see what your point is. This team has not been very good as a group defensively. Mm-hmm. And Erik Karlsson might be a two-time Norris winner, and he might win the Norris again this year, but he's more of an offensive-minded defenseman. We're talking about being a, more of a well-rounded defensive team, and when you're talking about Adam Oates, I think he would be a great hire, and you know he's been working, as you mentioned, with other players in the NHL, and if you look at the Ottawa Senators' power play, that was one of the reasons why they struggled so much this year. Their penalty kill was second last in the NHL, Drew, and their power play was fifth last in the NHL. So when you combine the power play and the penalty kill, Senators were similar to the Winnipeg Jets in that their special teams really let them down this year. Adam Oates is known as a power play specialist,
sure,
not only as a player but as a coach. He's worked with players to get them better on the penalty kill. So we'll see if he's the guy that they go with there. But certainly the Ottawa Senators, I think, are a team that needs to bring in personnel and also kind of change, as you mentioned, a bit of the identity of the team. A lot of skill there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get their goals with guys like Turris and Stone and Ryan and these guys. But they got to be better defensively. They didn't do a good enough job this year.
One team that didn't make a coaching change, and I think I know personally that I was surprised that they announced that this coach is going to be back, are the Boston Bruins. Here's Bruins general manager Don Sweeney on retaining Claude Julien as their head coach.
Will Claude be head coach next season?
Absolutely. I emphatically believe that Claude's a coach that can take us through what I'll describe as been a bumpy transition period this year. We've got work to do. I have work to do. There's no question. We have areas that we want to address. And collectively, we've already started to assess that. We did throughout the course of the year. And we've tried to address some of those things. And we're going to continue to address them.
You know, Claude Julien last year when Don Sweeney was hired as general manager seemed like he was definitely on rocky ground. They took a long time last season before affirming that he would be back as head coach. When the Bruins collapsed at the end of this year, end up falling out of a playoff spot that they were in really up until the last couple games of the season, I thought the writing was on the wall that Julien would be dismissed as head coach. Not the case. Don Sweeney with a strong endorsement of Claude Julien as their coach going forward. I think it's the right decision, but I'm surprised by it nonetheless.
Well, yeah, and it's unfortunate Tuukka Rask couldn't play in that final game. But at the end of the day, Drew, the Boston Bruins missed the playoffs by 1 point. So it's not like the Boston Bruins were completely out of it. You know, they collapsed. They did not play well down the stretch. I think mm-hmm. they won, what, 3 of their last 10, something like that. And when you're talking about Claude Julien, you know, Drew, I've always been a big fan of Claude Julien going back to his days with the Montreal Canadiens. I think he's an excellent coach. I think he manages his players well. I think he just sees the game really well. He's got tons of experience and a great track record with this team. But if this was going to be his last year, and it's not, you got to think that this year he's got to get this team back into the playoffs, or when we're having this conversation next year, they're going to go in a different direction. This Boston Bruins team, we've talked about it now for well over 2 years. The window for this team is closing just because Zdeno Chara, for example, mm-hmm. is towards the end of his career. He's been the staple of that defense.
They need to address that defense.
Well, plus, Drew, you've lost Johnny Boychuk and Dougie Hamilton over the last couple of years. Boychuk due to salary cap reasons, and then Hamilton because they weren't going to sign him and they traded him to Calgary mm-hmm. for those draft picks. So I this defense is not good enough. The trouble for Boston was not scoring goals this year. And you saw Brad Marchand almost got to 40 goals
sure.
this year.
Career high.
And you know, you had other players that were good on this team. Patrice Bergeron, obviously, Krejci.
Mm-hmm. Pasternak's only getting better.
Pasternak's a good young player. This team can score goals, but they had trouble defending. Tuukka Rask didn't have his best season. But I think it's great to hear that Claude Julien's going to be back, because if they make the playoffs and they get knocked out in the first round, I don't think his job is in jeopardy at all. But they fall short, and the expectations in Boston are always to make the playoffs.
Sure.
But I do think that it's nice that he's going to get one more crack at it.
Before we head to break, we're going to have to shelve this until next week's show. The Arizona Coyotes fired general manager Don Maloney. Sounds like he lost a power struggle.
That was a terrible decision.
Yeah, I have trouble believing any NHL team, and we'll talk about it more next week, but I have trouble believing any NHL team is better off without Don Maloney in their front office.
We had him on the show, yeah. and he's a really nice guy, and his track record is excellent in the NHL. With all of the ownership issues the Coyotes were having, it's unfortunate.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Kevin Allen of USA Today joins us to talk about the playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Kevin Allen. Kevin covers the NHL for USA Today. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Kevin, we want to obviously talk about the NHL playoffs with you. Want to start in St. Louis, Missouri, where last night the Blues fans had their fair share of misery as a result of the NHL's challenge system and video review, which took away a game or a goal that would have given the Blues the lead. They end up giving up a power play goal to the Blackhawks, tying the series up at one game apiece. Your thoughts on the call last night? I mean, technically, I suppose it's the right call, but is it taking away something from the game of hockey that that play is now being reviewed?
Well, it's the great debate. We talked about this a little bit at the general manager meeting, in March when there was discussion about, is this really what we want to do? Like, you know, in theory, coaches challenge of instant replay use is what we want. We want to get the play right. But, you know, at a time when the goals are so hard to score, to see that so close offside call negate a goal was really, really difficult. And I think it feeds into the Blues fans' perception that their team is jinxed a little bit.
Now, Kevin, the Chicago Blackhawks tied up the series last night, and this series has certainly had its fair share of overtime games. Are you expecting that this series is going to go right to seven games?
Well, yeah. I mean, I expected it to be a long one. And to be honest, I thought this was the year the Blues were going to get them. I really haven't been all that impressed with the Blues down the stretch. Like, I've covered the league a long time, 30 years, and the Blackhawks have been one of the more fascinating teams that I've seen, and teams being, over several years. Like, they really, it's almost like they have a PhD in winning. Like, they sort of understand what it takes to win in the postseason. They go into a game and they unveil their survival skills and they hang on until they figure out how to win. Well, I thought they had lost some of that. You know, the erosion caused by salary cap, they had lost their depth this year defensively. They were not ranked, in the top five. And, it's interesting, but each time they've been ranked in the top five, they've won the cup. And when they've fallen out of there, they haven't, and they were out. So I thought this year was, the opportunity for the Blues to beat them. But, what I saw in game two was that Blackhawks, prowess that allows them to sort of be successful. They just sort of hung around, played a solid game, and found a way at the end to win it. And if you're the Blues, I'm sure that planted some self-doubt. So I think the series is going to go on a long time.
Kevin, the Hawks lost Johnny Oduya to the Dallas Stars in the offseason, and he's essentially been replaced by Trevor Van Riemsdyk in the top four. Do you have concerns about the Chicago Blackhawks getting out of, well, if they do get out of the first round, do you have concerns that they're going to be able to defend and go all the way and get back to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, I mean, that was my concern exactly. I mean, if you go back to last season, Joel Quenneville, the coach, really only had trust in four defensemen. And in the Stanley Cup final, really only used four defensemen, the number five and number six, sat. This year, it feels to me he only trusts three defensemen. And Trevor Van Riemsdyk played well early and then hit a wall. And then, I think maybe he's coming around a little bit now. But, I think it's hard on Quenneville because he's built up this rapport with these guys, this core group. And now, as I said before, it's diminished and it's eroded. And, they haven't been as sharp. Like, what's amazing about where they are defensively is Corey Crawford had an exceptional season. And I think that was lost on a lot of people. He played really, really well. And he was the primary reason why they kept the goals down as low as they did. It wasn't really their defensive play. So, whether or not they could pick it up and just kind of shut it down the way that, they have in the past remains to be seen. But I agree with that assessment. I think they're a lot less predictable, the Blackhawks, than they were in the last few seasons.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, a team you're quite familiar with being based in Michigan, of course, the Detroit Red Wings. They're down 2-0 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. You look at the Lightning and the line of Johnson, Kucherov, and Killorn combining for 15 points in the first two games of that series. Sort of a two-part question. One, are you surprised that the Red Wings have been having such trouble with that top line? And two, are you also surprised at the amount of physicality and bad blood that seems to be existing between the Lightning and the Red Wings, two teams that aren't particularly known for being, you know, physically inclined, let's say?
Yeah. Well, the first part, I would say that I'm not surprised. Tyler Johnson was so good and so effective against the Red Wings last season, and even though he has had a really uneven season this year, a lot of it due to injury, but, you know, he just really wasn't the same player that we saw in the postseason. But, you know, I think it's almost like he smells blood in the water when he plays against the Red Wings, because he's completely different and, you know, very dynamic and drives the net and, you know, finds, you know, the seams in the defense. And they don't really have an answer for him. And this is not a stellar defensive unit. They don't have the premium defenseman that can step in and shut down a top performer, so that line has caused them a lot of problems. And with regard to the bad blood, I mean, historically the rivalries are developed in the postseason, and the Red Wings and Tampa Bay went to a Game 7 last year, and you know, there's the Yzerman connection as well, and for all those reasons, I think you saw that boil over last night. And you know, I don't think it's going to get any better. I would predict in Game 3 we're going to see the Tampa Bay Lightning at least attempt to bring about some vigilante justice here. I would assume they'll go after Abdicator, even though I'm sure the league will be telling them not to. But, you know, I think there's going to have to be an answer for the Abdicator moves last night.
Goaltending was such an issue for the Red Wings down the stretch, and really, you know, for the last, you know, since the new year, since 2016. Do you expect that you'll see Peter Mrazek in net for the Red Wings after Jimmy Howard sub 900 save percentage through the first two games?
Well, for sure. I just, you know, I said before the series started that, you know, I figured at some point we were going to see Mrazek. And, you know, the reason is simple. Like, Mrazek performed poorly and lost his job down the stretch. But, you know, if you compare it to baseball, if you have a guy that, you know, bats 280 and has 18 to 20 home runs, and you have another guy on the bench who, you know, might bat 240 and strike out now and then, but he's got potential to hit 40 or 45 home runs, that's the guy you still want in the lineup. And I think that's what we see with Mrazek. Mrazek can be spectacular, and he's young, so, you know, he's a little bit inconsistent. But, you know, he's got a chance to be among the top goalies in the league. So I think you just go with him and you just hope he steals the, you know, the series. Because, you know, Howard can be good, but that's all he can be. He can be good. You know, he can't be spectacular. So I think that's what they're going to do. I think they'll go back to Mrazek and just hope, you know, he's rediscovered the magic, because he was among the league's best goalies in the first half of the season.
Kevin, the Penguins-Rangers series has certainly turned out to be one of the more intriguing series, with Jeff Zatkoff starting and winning Game 1, and then Henrik Lundqvist leaving the game, Antti Raanta coming in, and then Henrik Lundqvist being questionable for this afternoon's game. When you consider that the Rangers are going to be missing Dan Girardi and Ryan McDonagh for at least Game 2, do you think the Rangers have any chance of coming back in the series?
Well, you always have a chance if Lundqvist is playing. I mean, he's certainly another goalie that I think is capable of being a difference maker in any series. So, you know, presuming he's fine, and all indications were that they didn't think there would be any long-term impact from the stick that got under his mask, then, you know, I certainly think they have the chance. But the Penguins are very good right now. Like, they were better than the Washington Capitals down the stretch. And a lot of people have been concentrating on the fact that they're getting 4 and 5 goals against everybody they played. But to me, what I noted about the Penguins is suddenly they've pushed themselves into, you know, by the end, I think they were ranked 6th in terms of goals against, you know, per game. When did we ever see a Penguins team that could play defensive hockey when, mm-hmm. when it was needed? Now, the big question I felt was, is could they make that conversion from regular season hockey to playoff-style hockey, because it is different, and it's one thing to play good defense in the regular season and a whole different animal to do it in the postseason. And I was at game one, and I felt you could see this team converting. And I think the key is Chris Letang. Like, you know, he can play. He's not just a dynamic offensive defenseman. He can play defense. He can play that gritty style. And I think they fed off him pretty in that game one. Like, I noticed the team sort of, as Letang cranked it up, they cranked it up as well.
Kevin Allen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the NHL for USA Today. We're discussing the playoffs. Now, Kevin, if the Flyers and Capitals series, you know, any sort of upset by the Flyers would have been one of the more stunning in hockey history, given how dominant the Capitals were all season long. Now the Flyers are going to try and have to do that without Sean Couturier in their lineup. It was going to be a hard task to begin with. Does Couturier's injury make it a fairly close to an impossibility?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. You know, he's sort of their young Ron Francis, the kind of the two-way guy, and they don't really have a matchup center other than him. So it will make it tough. You know, they'll give it a go, and I was real impressed with the Flyers down the stretch. I think Hextall did a tremendous job of sort of changing their culture a little bit as well. And, you know, Ron Hextall is a very, you know, he was a very emotional player, but he's a very patient general manager, and I really like what he's done with that team. He's just slowly sort of changing it, working on that defense a little bit. You know, he had some pretty good players to start with, and now he's just sort of, you know, gradually changing that team over. And then I think the decision to bring Hextall, a college coach, which, you know, is not the sort of move that most GMs would make, I think really sort of epitomizes that, you know, that even though he's patient, you know, he has an aggressive side to him, as he saw with the selection of his coach.
Kevin, I saw yesterday you were tweeting about the lack of Canadian teams and whether or not that was going to impact Canadian hockey fans' interest in the playoffs. Who have you been able to ascertain as being Canada's team coming out of the U.S. now that there aren't any Canadian teams in the playoffs?
Well, what I discovered is there really is no Canada's team. Like, but I, you know, and the people who responded, you know, it was pretty clear that, you know, it's Canada's game, and most of the players are Canadian. So that's, you know, that's what I'm going to write today, that fans, you know, they're still interested in the storylines of the playoffs. They're interested in whether or not the, you know, the Capitals can finally achieve playoff success after so many years, and, you know, what can Crosby do, and, you know, will Drouin, who was persona non grata for the Lightning, suddenly rise up and become a star? So, you know, the one thing about Canadians that I think we all admire south of the border is that, you know, they understand what they're all about in terms of their sports watching. You know, they watch the World Juniors at the holiday, and they do it in terms that Americans can't possibly understand, and they watch the playoffs in the NHL the same way. And, you know, we're still suffer low ratings by comparison to the other sports anyway, you know, down south of the border. But I would venture to guess that the ratings aren't going to be too far off, even without Canadian teams.
Kevin, regular listeners of our show will know that we regularly have you on our Stanley Cup preview show to preview either the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference. Because we didn't get a chance to have you on our Stanley Cup preview show, who do you have coming out of the East, and who do you have coming out of the West, and who's your eventual Stanley Cup winner? I know I'm putting you a little bit on the spot here.
No, not at all. You know, I had the Penguins coming out. I thought they were playing the best hockey at the end coming out of the East, and after watching what happened last night, I'm a little concerned about my Western pick because I had the Ducks. And I think this was probably not the best possible matchup for the Ducks in the first round, but I still think that the Ducks are have what's required to make a nice run. I mean, they can play that 1-0, 2-1 hockey, and it didn't happen last night for them, but I like the Ducks team.
You know, Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. I was going to actually ask you about the Ducks and the Predators. Predators go into Anaheim, and they take game one of that series. Do you have any concerns about the emotional, psychological fragility about the Anaheim Ducks? You know, it wasn't that many months ago, really, at the start of the year, that they were such a, that they got off to such a terrible start. Do you think that there's any sort of, you know, question in the Ducks' brains regarding about if those, you know, ugly moments from the beginning of the season could rear their head at the worst possible time?
Well, I think that's an astute and fair question because, you know, it's all in their minds in Anaheim. There's no doubt about it. And I think also complicating the issue is how much they like their coach, Bruce Boudreau. And, you know, I think that sort of interferes as well. Like, they really want to perform for him, and, you know, they want to help him out. He's been on the hot seat almost, you know, from the very beginning there. And, you know, all he does is win in the regular season, but he hasn't been able to go all the way. So, you know, I think there's a lot of complications there. You know, their goaltending is talented but not quite proven. You know, they've made that conversion from trying to be an offensive team and then deciding we can't score enough to do that, so we got to win 1-0, 2-1. And I talked to Cam Fowler at the end of the season. He said that he felt what they went through would help them in the playoffs, but, you know, it could also go the other way as well.
Kevin Allen covers the National Hockey League for USA Today. Kevin, always appreciate your time and insights. Enjoy what's going to be a great day of hockey coming up with the Rangers and the Penguins in a couple of hours.
Sounds good. Call me anytime, guys.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Alexander Ovechkin's greatest impact is usually on the score sheet, but in Game 1 against the Philadelphia Flyers, it was that other part of his game, physicality, that dealt the Flyers a huge blow, knocking Sean Couturier out of the game, perhaps out of the series. How big a loss would that be?
A huge loss. One of the most valuable players for the Philadelphia Flyers is Sean Couturier. He plays the power play, plays the penalty kill. He's an even strength contributor offensively. There isn't any part of the Flyers game that isn't impacted by the loss of a guy like Sean Couturier.
That, of course, being TSN's Bob McKenzie alongside James Duthie, Masters winner James Duthie. I don't know if you saw him, his tweets and his Instagram earlier in the week. He got picked out of the draw of journalists to play the Masters course last Monday after their coverage there of the golf tournament all weekend long. So lucky guy, that James Duthie. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, speaking of the Masters, and Clear Lake Golf Course. Become a member of Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and you'll receive the same playing privileges at Clear Lake Golf Course, located in beautiful Riding Mountain National Park. Find out more at bellacres.com. Also, follow them on Twitter at Bell Acres. The Capitals and the Flyers, Game 2 of that series, gets underway later on today as well. A huge loss, Ezra, for the Philadelphia Flyers with the news that Sean Couturier is going to be out of the lineup for the remainder of the series. Probably 2 weeks minimum worth of an injury. Say it was unlikely at the start of the series that the Flyers were going to be able to knock off the Capitals. But from my perspective right now, this is already a thin Flyers team. You lose Sean Couturier, their best two-way center. Going to be pretty hard to control the juggernaut Washington Capitals at that point in time.
Yeah, and the Flyers missed Sean Couturier earlier in the season. Couturier had some injury problems. As you mentioned, Drew, I had the Washington Capitals winning the series with Sean Couturier in the lineup, and it looks like Braden Schenn is going to move to second-line center. He's been playing the wing for most of the year, even though he's been a center for most of his NHL career. So you'll see Schenn on the second line there with Claude Giroux, obviously with Voracek there on the top line. But when you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers, they just couldn't generate enough offense. And I don't think this Washington Capitals team gets enough credit for how well they played defensively as a group. And you're talking about Carl Alsner and Matt Niskanen, and you're talking about John Carlson, who, even though he's known as more of an offensive defenseman, he's really improved the defensive side of his game. So I think when you're talking about this Capitals team, they're just so good in all aspects of the game. They just don't give you a lot of time and space. And even though the Philadelphia Flyers in Game 1 had all of those power play opportunities in the first period, they couldn't take advantage. And they weren't even getting shots on net. I think they had a combined 3 shots on net in those 3 power plays in the first period. And Braden Holtby was excellent. He didn't need to make 40 saves. I think he ended up with 19 saves or something like that. They only had 8 shots on net in the final two periods.
Yeah.
And Washington just controls the play 5-on-5. And especially if you give them power play opportunities, they've got an excellent power play. They're going to make you hurt. So,
well, the and you know, to your point, the Flyers had a golden opportunity, 3 golden opportunities in that first period of game one, getting 3 first period power play opportunities. The Capitals didn't have any. They couldn't capitalize. They really couldn't even threaten the Capitals. And then from then on, the ice was just tilted for the final two periods of that game. If you're a Flyers team and you can only muster 8 shots on goal in the last two periods, and it was still a close game. I mean, it was still a 1-0 game for the majority of the contest. It wasn't until later in the third, that the Capitals were able to get that 2-0 goal. You know, the score was not emblematic of the play on the ice. The Capitals really were the dominant team in that series. And I think you could see that the Flyers were getting frustrated. You know, you have Tom Wilson and Wayne Simmonds dropping the gloves. Now, Wayne Simmonds is no slouch. He's a big boy, and he can play the game with some physicality. But if you're the Flyers, you don't have a ton of offense to begin with. You can't be putting Wayne Simmonds in the box for 5 minutes with Tom Wilson. I mean, the Capitals are fine taking that trade-off every single game, given the disparity in talent between Wilson and Simmonds.
Well, and that's been the issue for this Philadelphia Flyers team for quite some time now. They have great offensive players, but they're top-heavy. Mm-hmm. So you've got Claude Giroux, you've got Jakub Voracek. Wayne Simmonds had another 30-goal season. He had a great year. And you got to throw in Braden Schenn had a career year as well. But then there's the drop-off, and then Couturier, I guess if you want to throw him in there, even though he's more of a defensive forward. He can contribute offensively, don't get me wrong, but he's not ever going to be a 70-point guy. So I think when you're talking about this Flyers team, they're at a significant disadvantage already with Couturier in the lineup, and then you take him out of there because Couturier is going to be tasked with shutting down Alexander Ovechkin, right? Yeah. And Barry Trotz was trying to get Ovechkin's line, Backstrom and Ovechkin's line, away from Couturier, but then you're still going to have Couturier potentially shutting down Evgeny Kuznetsov's line with Burakovsky, right?
It's pick your poison.
So he's a very effective player. He did this to Sidney Crosby years ago, so you're going to be asking Steve Mason to basically steal a game here in Washington. I mean, the Washington Capitals won this game 2-0. It could have easily been 3-0 or 4-0. And I thought early on they were, you know, we mentioned the power plays that they had. Brooks Orpik took a bad penalty on Nick Cousins. If you remember, he got he got his shoulder up on Nick Cousins. But I thought after that first period, they really settled down, and this team just is so dangerous from so many different angles. You mentioned Tom Wilson and Mike Richards killing penalties. The roles are so defined with Barry Trotz. They do such an excellent job preparing this team. They're a well-oiled machine. We've talked about it. It's going to be very tough for a team to beat the Washington Capitals in a 7-game series. So game 2 is coming up, and it'll be nice to see, you know, whether or not the Philadelphia Flyers can make a series of it. But right now, it's going to be very tough with Couturier out.
Yeah, I mean, I have trouble believing that this series is going much past 5 games, you know, without Couturier in the lineup. Scott Laughton going to make his playoff debut, likely for the Flyers, playing on the third line. Nick Cousins is the center, and Sam Gagner. The Flyers just don't have the forward depth to withstand the loss of Sean Couturier. They don't have the defensive depth to handle the wave after wave of offensive talent thrown that the Capitals can throw at them. I mean, the Capitals have been the best team in the league all season long. They're going to prove it, I suspect, in this first-round matchup. And then hockey fans, you know, I know I got my fingers crossed for the Penguins and the Capitals second-round playoff matchup. I might be getting ahead of myself. Probably am getting ahead of myself. But hockey fans are desperate to see Ovechkin and Crosby yet again in the playoffs. It's been so many years since we last saw that.
Oh, that would be a fantastic series, and it's only been one game in each series. So we
are getting ahead of myself.
We are getting a little ahead of ourselves. But again, back to the Washington and Philadelphia. Philadelphia's problem is, if you're not going to be shutting down, or if you are shutting down Ovechkin's line, then you're going to have to shut down Backstrom's line. And even the third line there is very good with you know, a guy like Jason Chimera, who's been a consistent third line grinder for the Washington Capitals for so many years there. So I think that the series is going to be a short one. But again, you know, we'll see what happens. If Steve Mason can you know, stand on his head and keep this game a low scoring game, you never know what can happen. but it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's head to break. When we come back, the focus of the hockey world isn't necessarily only on the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's a hell of a hockey tournament happening 2 hours south of us in Grand Forks. When we come back, we speak with Jody Hodgson. He's the general manager of the Ralph Engelstad Arena in Grand Forks. We talk about the World Under 18 Hockey Championships. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.